Today is Friday, April 12th, 2019. This is a part two interview, Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Ann Hopkinson, H-O-P-K-I-N-S-O-N. And my name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Ann. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Good. Ann, may we have your permission to record this conversation over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you again for your time yesterday in part one. And one of the things that I wanted to know a little bit more about was about Roger Paris. You'd mentioned that he was a thrifty guy and made his own boats. Can you talk about that some?
Yeah, well, everybody made their own boats back then, but there were a few people that did it commercially, but he always made his, yeah. And he was a racer at heart, very competitive, so he always made his extra light. And
how would he do that? So I mean, not being a boat builder myself, certainly kayaks, how do you do that?
Just fewer layers of fiberglass.
Okay.
And every time you put another layer on, you have to use more resin, and that weighs more. So
the boat gets.
And you need a certain number of layers with the fibers going different directions and so forth for the strength.
Okay.
And you wrap them in a mold, around a mold.
How would you make the mold?
Well, it's sort of like you build a negative around an existing boat.
Okay.
I mean, the first boat, you'd have to carve it out of something.
Okay.
Or just, and I'm not sure how they do that. Most people that I knew used an existing boat, and sometimes they'd modify it.
Hmm.
And then, yeah, so it's a two-step process. You make the negative shape, and then you make two shells, an upper and out, and lower, hull and deck of the existing boat. And so you make it in two parts.
Okay.
And then you have to seam it and, you know, fit it together and seam it both inside and out. And you had to reach way up into the bow.
Wow.
Back then, you know, they were long.
Yeah.
It's a very long, difficult process, yeah.
And I'm assuming the more fiberglass, the more resin, the boat gets stronger, but it gets heavier. So there was
right.
A trade-off between strength and speed.
Exactly. And actually, Fletcher's father was one of the first people. Apparently, two people did it in parallel, but they didn't know about each other, to make a fiberglass boat.
Wow.
Because they had paddled in fold boats, and that's how Fletcher grew up, being taken on with fold boats. And most of them were double, and that was another source of humor that they often joked about, because they were double and they were called divorce boats.
Yep.
They were so fragile, and as soon as you hit a rock, there's a hole in the boat, and you had to stop. And of course, you blame your partner and so forth. But anyway, yeah, it was a lengthy process to make these. Oh, the first one he made was like 80 pounds. You know,
wow.
It was hard to suck out the resin, and eventually they set up a vacuum so they can suck out the extra resin.
I see.
To make the boat lighter and still be strong. And then, so anyway, Roger would just do a couple layers, or I don't know how many. I didn't build boats because I was highly allergic to the resin. So
ah, okay.
I stayed away from it.
So that explains something for me, the Kirschbaum kayak at Grand Canyon. the bottom is much stronger than the top.
Yeah, and the other thing they used to do is make weak place around the cockpit so that it would break if you wrapped.
Oh, okay. So you sort of a safety feature to kind of even just break out of the thing if you were stuck in the boat somehow.
Yeah. Wow. You're wrapped on a rock. Yeah.
What a great idea.
So it wouldn't pinch you close, you know. Yeah. So anyway, you can see why the advent of the plastic boat was welcomed.
Yeah.
Because it's a big deal to make one.
Can we go...
And then you had to make the cockpit, too, and fit that, and a seat and all that. It took forever.
How were you making your seats then?
There was a seat mold.
Okay.
Also. And, but some people just put foam in the bottom.
All right.
I mean, well, a lot of those foams came in later, but, yeah, I think... Yeah, there was, mostly we had the seats were made out of fiberglass, too.
Okay. And then you glass the top to the bottom, and
yeah,
we're ready to go. Did you all make your own skirts, your old spray skirts?
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Suit material, neoprene, and, you know, trace the cockpit size, and you stuck the elastic in to go under.
Okay.
You know, just glued it, and the elastic was inside a channel that went under the cockpit rim.
Okay.
And, yeah, that is pretty much how they make them now, just they were funky because they're homemade.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for a while, they just had, like, waterproof material. It wasn't neoprene.
Like a...
And same idea. Just put a piece of elastic cord under the... for fit under the cockpit.
Like a duck canvas or some sort of water impervious cloth, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they leaked a lot more back then than they do now. Yeah. Just because the cockpits were homemade and whatever.
Wow.
You know.
Okay. All right. You mentioned
your spray jacket leaked too. Your splash jacket leaked too because that was homemade. So basically, you were sitting in a pool of water, cold water, all the time. I still remember when I took several years off of not paddling, and during that time, all the equipment evolved, and I got back in my modern equipment when my son was starting to kayak, and I just like, wow, my butt's dry. This is amazing.
Nice.
I could see doing this again.
And the boats were getting shorter.
Yeah. And they were making small ones to fit people that were smaller. I mean, when I started, I just was in this gigantic boat with a swim sloshing around in the seat. It was really hard to control the boat. And Fletcher was great about customizing it and you'd made your own thigh braces too, and he'd wrap the fiberglass around some Coke cans to grab your thigh kind of thing.
And sort of glue them up there.
Yeah, and so that was very individual, you know, because everybody's hip size are different lengths and at different angles and so forth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everyone would customize their boat and to fit their size and make it so they could roll the boat a little.
Let's go back to fold boats. You mentioned that Fletcher's father got into fold boating. Do you know that any of that story? What was Fletcher's father's name?
Keith Anderson. K-E-I-T-H, or I-E, I guess. I don't know. Well, he was in 10th Mountain Division.
Okay.
As were many of the people who started the ski areas in Colorado, Larry Jump, Max Durkheim, I think. I can't think of any other ones right now.
How do you spell Larry's last name?
Jump, J-U-M-P.
Okay, and then Max?
Durkheim, D-E-R-K-H-A-M, I think.
Okay.
Might be U-R, D-U-R, I'm not sure. He was Keystone.
Okay.
Larry was A Basin.
Wow, all right.
Okay. Anyway, these guys, Willie Scheffler was in there. I don't know if he was the 10th Mountain, but he was in their group. He was big in the U.S. ski team, USSA and all that.
Okay. Scheffler, S-S-C-H?
S-C-H-A-E-F-F-L-E-R.
Thank you.
Something like that.
Scheffler. Okay.
He's very well known. He was in ski racing.
All right. So your dad knew Larry and Max and Willie, and they, during training the 10th Mountain Division during World War II?
Yeah. Fletcher's dad,
I'm sorry. Yes. Thank
and,
you.
But they all kayaked together.
Okay.
After the war.
In fold boats.
In the 50s. In fold boats, yeah. And they I think they skied together, too, quite a bit.
Okay. Did Keith run through Glen Canyon or I'm thinking Cataract Canyon or even the Lodore in the 50s in a full boat? Did they get out and do those places? Do you know?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if they did the Amp or the Lodore, but they know they did Hell's Half Mile. Is that below the confluence or?
So Hell's Half Mile is up in Lodore. Yeah, it's above.
Okay, so
above
they did.
Okay.
Yeah, I know they did that. Another person I know who did Lodore with Hatch on a surfboard.
Wow, when was that?
I don't know when it was, but it was John Fetcher. He lived in Steamboat on a ranch.
How do you spell
John? He was actually my. F-E-T-C-H-E-R. He was actually the best man at my parents' wedding.
Oh.
He was from Philadelphia, too.
Wow. Hang on a second. Wait. Stop.
Sorry.
No. Don't be sorry. This is great.
I know, because he didn't get credit for being the first SUP guy to do.
That's what I'm thinking. How did he? What? So was this like in the 50s or the 60s or when? When are we talking here?
When did Hatch start?
52, 53 in Dinosaur.
I don't know when it was.
Okay.
I just know when I went to see him one time. He showed me the surfboard and he told me about it, but I don't know if he told me the date. But he has a son and daughter.
Do you know how to get in touch with them? I'd love to talk to him.
His son he ran for office. He ran for state rep, I think. And Jay is his name, Jay Fetcher. And I think he's a vet, veterinarian.
All right.
That's all I know. Yeah. So you probably could track him down through that.
I will try that. Yeah, thank you. Did John have a paddle? I mean, how do you steer it?
I don't know.
He must. Otherwise,
he might have just laid on it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Kidding.
I thought it was so out there when I heard it. I wasn't smart enough to ask him.
Nobody could see the future going, dude, that's going to be the stand-up paddleboard of the future. This is great.
I know.
I was like, you're crazy. I walked away.
And now that's all I do is stand up paddling.
Is that right? Oh, good for you.
I have done Lodore at 9,000 on the stand up paddleboard.
Wow. I'm so impressed. I'm like, I get on those things, I'll fall over. It's like, that's really neat. Huh. Yeah, I'll try to find that story. I'd love to see a picture of that. Nice.
Well, I don't know. But he did it. Hatch was his. He went with Hatch.
Okay.
I remember that.
All right. Well, we'll certainly make some inquiries there. So Keith, and Willie and John Fetcher, and Larry and Max, they were all sort of water people for paddling in the summer and skiing in the winter.
Yeah. Well, I don't. John Fetcher wasn't in that group.
Oh, okay.
That was a separate connection. Yeah, that was through my side of the family, actually. Yeah.
All right. Well, he was on the surfboard, so he wasn't in the club.
<That's>
looking
right.
At him,
he
going,
kayak.
Dude, what's wrong?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they clearly, if they're doing Lador in a fold boat, they are pushing the envelope for what the boat can do. It's a pretty fragile craft, so it would make sense that when fiberglass came along, they said, this looks stronger and lightweight, and let's try that.
Yeah. Well, that's the kind of mind Keith had. He was always just super smart guy and, you know, creative thinker. So
nice.
He was experiment with it, yeah. And they did, Keith did Fibark, too. So actually we have Keith, Fletcher, and my son, our son, have all done Fibark race, the long one.
Your son's name is?
Leif, L-E-I-F.
Okay, great. So that's three generations of Fibarkers.
And so do the Lacey family have that. Gary's dad did it, and Gary, and his brother, I don't remember which one did it. Anyway, Gary did it the most seriously. And then their son, Spencer, was really big into. He's one of the best suppers in the world.
Nice.
So and he's done lava. He's done the Grand
on a stand-up paddleboard.
They're amazing. Yeah, there are amazing videos of him running lava.
Nice. And so let's. That's the Lacey family.
Yeah.
L A C E Y.
No E.
L A C Y.
Yeah.
Okay. And. Who was the first of the Lacys to run Fibark?
Their father, I can't remember his name right now. He's a nice guy. He's a big guy in Grand Junction.
Okay, then his son?
His son Gary. And he has, there's three sons. I think they've all done it.
Okay.
Tom, Gary and one other who still lives in Grand Junction. I can't remember his first name right now.
And then Gary's son is Spencer?
Yeah.
All right.
He also has one named Mason who's probably done it too.
Wow. And what about the women? Do you ever remember meeting Carol Kane?
No.
Okay. K-A-N-E. Carol was really early on in Fibark and a very good kayaker. Do you remember any other of the strong women kayakers at the time?
Just Laurie Walters is the main one I remember.
Okay.
When I was racing. And Liz Heyman. I think of her more of a slalom paddler. I'm not sure she did the long one.
H-Y-M-A-N?
H-A-Y-M-A-N, yeah.
And Liz worked as a Grand Canyon River guide. Is that right?
I don't think so, but I could be wrong. I lost touch with her.
Okay. Maybe
her nickname
not.
Was Boo.
Okay.
I did think of some other names of the people that were in that racing circle.
Like who?
Back in the 70s. Liz was one of them.
Okay.
Liz Heyman, and darn it. I should have written them down.
No worries.
He died anyway, so. Al did. He was a great guy. But, you know, Ben Harding, that was it. Ben would be a great resource. He's got that kind of mind that remembers details. He's in Boulder.
Okay.
And he knows a lot of the history stuff, I think. He's married to a Udall.
Okay. All right. So kind of going back to Keith Anderson. Keith's wife's name was?
Catherine. Huber.
How do you spell her last name?
Her maiden name was Huber, H-U-B-E-R. Well, no, that wasn't her maiden name. She was married before, actually.
Okay.
I think she was just Kat Anderson, yeah.
Do you know how Kat met Keith?
She was in, her first husband and she were in that group of that did outdoor things.
Okay.
And, with a little switcheroo.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, they all got divorced.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't.
And do you remember the year Fletcher was born?
48.
Okay. So, 1958, when he was 10, Glen Canyon Dam was under construction. By the time he was 20 in 68, Glen Canyon was down, Flaming Gorge was down, so a lot of the big dams were certainly in place, Hell's Canyon, in that time period. I'm just thinking about the changes to the rivers that people were boating on.
Yeah, I know they went and did the Maine salmon when he was 13. I saw a picture of that.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure he was in a full boat for that, yeah.
Nice. Okay. So that certainly started his early love of river running right there.
Well, he started younger than that, yeah, just locally too. But I think that was the first time maybe he went by himself, I don't know.
Okay. Where did they grow? Where were they living? Where did Fletcher grow up?
Denver.
Okay.
And they had some. They spent time in Georgetown too. They had another house up there.
Okay. And what did Keith do?
He was an attorney. And he was the attorney for A Basin, so they had free lifetime passes there and spent a lot of time there growing up.
So he would have known the Dines from their attorney work and maybe Gary Hart. And there were a number of doctors and lawyers out of Denver that were really powerful river runners on just doing a...
Gary Hart was?
Yeah. Wait, no, different... Sorry. Different. Different Gary Hart. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
This is a Jerry. Jerry Geronimo Hart. Back to the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
So,
yeah, I never heard of them, but that doesn't mean it wasn't that they didn't know him. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting, just kind of putting those connections together for the river.
Well, basically, and they talked about this a lot, his mom did, everyone who kayaked, you basically knew everyone who kayaked back then. And she always would, his mom was named Grace Anderson, and she would always say, oh, every time I see a car, I think I should know him with a kayak on top.
Yeah.
And I can't get used to the fact that so many people kayak now.
Nice. The early days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh. So eventually, you met Eric Leeper.
Yeah, Eric was, and Fletcher were already friends. They knew each other from Colorado Rocky Mountain School.
Okay, so maybe this is a good time to talk about Colorado Rocky Mountain School. What do you recall about the school?
Beautiful campus, great program. And they were, back then they were, the kayak program was like a center for producing the best kayakers and best racers, because they had such a good program. And they ride on the Crystal River. They could, and they still do this. They go, you know, during the season, they go several times a week and have top-notch teachers. And the other thing about the school that I admire is they teach independence and they have to do jobs and work, contribute to the school. They all have jobs like vacuuming or turning over the mulch pile or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And helping to build the buildings and things like that.
Nice.
And then when I just was always impressed, my son went there too. And I was resistant at first because it seemed pretty elitist, and there was a time when everyone I knew that had gone there just was kind of lost when they got out, because it's such a special environment where everyone's nurturing and cares, you know, like thinking in liberal ways, and then they got out in the world and they were pretty lost, you know. They all wanted to be potters or weavers and stuff and couldn't really find their way. But
interesting.
I think that's probably changed. And I was really glad my son ended up going there. It really made him blossom. And,
nice.
It was a great choice. But that's where Roger taught for a long time. And then in the summers, he had a kayak school, which was based there.
Okay.
Fletcher worked there. And, yeah, that's when he would still be using, when he taught, he'd use his fragile boats. And if somebody swam, you know, normally people, when they're in a class and they've tipped over and swum, they hold on to the teacher's boat and get towed to shore. And he would, he was famous for paddling right up near them and saying, "Swim to the shore, swim to the shore. Oh, no, don't touch my boat, don't touch my boat." And then, and he never wore a helmet. And it was a big issue for the kids to have that role model, because the kids had to wear helmets.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. But somehow he got away with it.
Yeah. It is fascinating to think about the changes in technology and the changes in safety and safety awareness over time that the pioneers weren't thinking about and struggled with accidents and...
Charlie Walbridge was huge in introducing a lot of the safety measures.
Okay, yes. He still is today.
Yeah, he is. He's done a lot. And I just remember Fletcher was kind of resistant to, you know, thinking they were overkill and so stuff like that.
Uh-huh, okay.
In retrospect, I think he's done a great deal for the sport, for sure.
And Walbridge, spelled last name, Charlie?
W-A-L-B-R-I-D-G-E.
Thank you. What do you remember about Charlie in his early days?
I didn't ever meet him.
Okay.
I just knew about him. He's from the East.
Yeah.
He made actually designed a life jacket that you could make as a kit. I still have mine.
Oh, my.
That floated you head up, you know, floated you high enough so your head floated upright, you know, instead of face down, things like that. The throw rope, he invented that. He taught people to use it. He just badgered people endlessly about, you know, basic safety concepts now.
Nice.
And he's still hugely instrumental. And, you know, every year in the ACA magazine, he compiles all the deaths and
yep.
why they happened and analyzes them.
And what to learn from them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's very... That's very wise. It's difficult. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
But there's much to be learned when we mess up about how not to do that. So.
And then he's that probably. I'm pretty sure he's done a lot to make municipalities and governments aware of the dangers of lowhead dams that are have keeper holes at the bottom.
Yes.
Like
especially when those dams have outlived their usefulness.
Yeah.
Yeah. What other memories do you have about the Colorado Rocky Mountain School?
Nat. Oh, that was another one. Nat Cooper. He's another guy that raced. He was from there. And I think he might have been on the team for a while. But they would put on a slalom race every year, and they had their own slalom course right there at the school.
Wow.
That they would hang every year.
Okay.
I mean, the Crystal River doesn't have a hugely long season, but some years it does.
Mm-hmm.
And some years it's too high. And,
yep.
But, yeah, they'd always have their race, and that was fun. And...
Did you ever?
It has a long history.
Did you ever compete in any of these races in FIBARC? And
oh yeah, yeah.
When was your first FIBARC race?
Maybe 76. I'm not sure. 70, something like that. I also did the pole pedal paddle in Jackson individually. Many years.
What was the Jackson race called?
Pole, pedal, paddle.
Pole, pedal, paddle. Okay.
Pole, pedal, paddle.
So that
so
was...
Ski the...
yeah, please.
You ski the mountain in a downhill course.
Okay.
Ungroomed. Then you'd do a 10K cross country and a 19-mile bike ride and a 12-mile on the river, on the Snake River.
Wow.
I still have it.
What do you remember about the first FIBARC race you were in back in 76?
Well, it was being exciting, and I wasn't... I mean, wild water boats are tippy, you know, and hard to steer. So I guess the first year I probably did it in a touring boat. Yeah, I did. That's right. But the first year in a wild water boat, well, either whatever it was, I just remember that they used to have frogmen.
Yes.
For safety. They were, you'd be coming up to some little drop off, and all of a sudden you look to your side, and some guy looked like he was about to grab you in a wetsuit. It was quite disconcerting. There was another story about some. This was before my time, but two women, very beautiful French women, were brought over in a canoe to do the race. And it was when bikinis were new. They had bikinis. And so they tipped over. Maybe it was cottonwood, I forget. And all these men jumped in the river to try and save them. And if you get help, then you're disqualified. And they were like beating them off.
We got ourselves. We're good. Leave us alone.
Yeah, and they did rescue themselves and finished and so forth. But
nice.
But anyway, yeah, Cottonwood was really exciting and big, and there's a big rock. It's right near the end of the race.
Uh huh.
Like mile 23 out of 26.
Yeah.
And there's this huge granite boulder at the toward the bottom of the rapid, with just covered with people screaming at you, and it's real easy to just peek on that rock. It just, the rapid takes you right toward it.
Mm. This is
big waves
on River Wright there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's quite exciting. But I made it.
Nice.
And then, another Fletcher's mom used to tell us about how back in the 50s, when they did the race, there was a train that went along. The spectators could ride in the train and watch the race. It just puttered along watching the racers.
Yes, that's right.
It was so popular.
That's right. It was a big deal.
It was cool, yeah. That race is really fun.
Yeah. And so how did you place?
I won.
You won?
Yeah, I won many times.
Congrats. That's wonderful.
There weren't that many women that did it, but...
Yeah, but for those that did, I mean, you were competing against some other, you know, very good boaters.
Yeah, I don't remember that well.
Well,
who was in it?
Great.
I know I won at least once because I remember getting interviewed on the radio.
Okay. Nice.
But I'm pretty sure I won several times. Yeah, we got big mugs and stuff. Yeah.
Nice.
It was more about doing it.
Yeah.
Doing your best. You know?
Yeah. Very fun. Very fun. Well, congratulations. That's just you're the first female that I've talked to that has won those events, and this is a lot of fun for me. It's like, oh my gosh, you won Fribourg. This is great. Do you remember any of the other runners? Do you remember? I bet that Danny Macris probably would have.
Oh yeah, I remember him. Yeah.
Been there. Makris, I think is.
Yeah.
And the Camptons, Chuck and Benny.
I don't remember Camptons.
Okay.
Gary Lacey was always in it.
Okay.
Scott Randolph. Andy Cora. As a fact, I was going to mention that there's a really neat tribute to Roger on Andy's Facebook.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Cora is his last name.
Okay.
Andy won it many, many times. He's a little younger, so he was a little past us. But oh, Jeff Parker.
Okay.
Scott Randolph, Fletcher. I think Nat used to do it, Nat Cooper. I imagine you can look those results up. But
yeah. But I can't talk to somebody who knew these people, you know, just directly. So that's a lot of fun.
Oh, okay.
Just hearing you know, remember these people. It's like, oh, yeah, all right, Scott Randolph then. And Gary Lacey.
Yeah, I see him now and then still. I see Gary more. But.
Nice.
And Mike Crenshaw. I don't know if Mike doesn't do the long one, but Mike has one leg amputated. But
okay.
We did a lot of river trips with him. He's a great guy.
Nice. Let's go back to Eric then. What were your early recollections of Eric?
He's an extremely elegant boater.
Okay.
Very skilled, very smart, unusual guy.
How so?
Speaks slowly.
Okay.
He just has a very strange manner, but speaks you know, he's very thoughtful and smart. Mm-hmm. And different, yeah. You'll find out when you meet him. And, he's always been interested in river politics, kind of, and been working toward that.
Yeah. What were the
bettering river access? Yeah.
Can you talk to that some, the river access politics back in the day?
Well, it's a lot of, back in the day they were still hashing out a lot of the permit systems and allocations, and so it seemed like there was more chance for shaping policy, but didn't turn out that way.
Mm-hmm.
Although Eric's done a huge amount of lobbying.
Yes.
Maybe he has had some influence, I don't know. I haven't followed it all that closely.
Okay.
Lately. Yeah. But he and Fletcher talked about it at length, and he got Fletcher on the board of NORS from the very beginning.
All right.
Fletcher was good at writing letters and testifying and things like that.
Okay.
Having brainstorming.
Do you remember who else was on the board there?
No.
And NORS is the National Outdoor River Sports?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or no, National Organization for River Sports.
Thank you. Yeah.
And I think it's still in existence, yeah.
So there was an attempt in the 1970s to seek legislation in Congress for do-it-yourselfers to make sure that they actually would get a chance to get on the water before the commercial people. Do you remember that legislative attempt at all?
No.
Okay.
Not precisely. To tell you the truth, I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I went on the protest paddles through Dinosaur.
All right.
And I showed up in court and stuff, but I wrote a few letters, but...
Yep. Okay.
I wasn't, I was for it in principle, but I did not apply myself to all the particulars of it.
Ins and outs. Yeah, no worries. Yeah. What do you remember of the protest paddle? Do you know who participated in it, and what do you call about that?
It was just the three of us, Fletcher, Eric, and I.
Okay.
And it was in April, and it snowed. That's the main thing. And we took out at Echo Park and had arranged for... At the time, it was... Perry Will? Is that...
Or Will Perry?
Superintendent?
Oh.
No, Will...
Okay.
It was the opposite, I thought, but I forget his name now. Anyway, he was a superintendent, was a friend-ish, and so he arranged to have us arrested. The sheriff met us at the takeout. It was cold and rainy, and we were prepared to hike out, actually. And I don't remember Eric being there. Maybe I'm conflating two stories.
Hmm.
I don't think so, though. Anyway, everyone was friendly, and it turned out the road was so muddy that the sheriff got the car slipped off halfway off the road. It was teetering over the edge, and we all had to, like, lean on the upper side of the car and get out, and it was quite exciting. And I guess somebody came and rescued us after that. not clear.
Uh-huh.
That's right, he picked us up, because we were dragging our boats up the road before he picked us up.
Okay.
And he was nice enough to give us a ride, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And then he just went through the paperwork. It was not like we were put in jail or anything.
Uh-huh.
Everyone was cooperating. And then we went to court. We had Tom Lamb was our lawyer.
Okay.
Pretty sure. But Judge Mach threw it out of court because it was not a criminal matter. He didn't want it in federal court.
Uh-huh.
So okay. Then we went a second time. But maybe that wasn't a protest. I can't remember. But I know after us, some people went, and they got treated quite badly and were put in jail. Some of them are sort of traumatized. And none of it ever came to do any good.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Do you have... Well, I'll ask you about this later. Contact for Eric. Put that down there.
I'll try to email that to you.
Yeah.
I'll look.
That would...
Okay.
That'd be great. Looking at notes here. Then, you mentioned, in part one, talking about your first Grand Canyon River trip where you were kayaking. And I wanted to know, because you might have been within the first 10 women to kayak through Grand Canyon.
That, really?
Well, this is 1975, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So... first 10 to 20, for your gender. Then, yeah. Did you come back again the next year and run Grand Canyon again?
I think so.
Okay. So I was thinking, you know, did you have any other Grand Canyon paddling stories, and then we sort of go from Grand Canyon maybe to Cataract Canyon and then to Lodore, just thinking about different rivers and different paddling stories.
Well, that first trip down the Grand, I really was a beginner, and I swam a lot, I remember. But I had a good rescuer.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I think that was a bad part of my experience, because I didn't learn to force myself to stay in the boat and try to roll more.
Okay.
But I was totally excited and thought it was fun. Nothing too bad happened. It was a May trip. It was 21 day because of the movie.
Okay.
They had a long permit and it was commercial. And we got lots of time to hike because I didn't have to hang around for the filming a lot of times. So
nice.
I could go wander around. Boatmen were great. It was really fun. And, of course, the first down there is mind-blowing.
Yeah. Yeah. And
as are all your trips, but...
When was the first time you paddled all the way through the canyon, all the way out to Lake Mead? Do you remember that?
I just done it once or twice, actually. Yeah. It wasn't until, like, 98 or something like that.
Okay.
And even then... Oh, no, we did it once. That's right. With some Texas group. That was probably in the 80s.
Okay.
But even then, I mean, I rode the raft on the lake part.
Okay.
Helped row the rafts and
yeah.
stuff.
All right. Any other Grand Canyon stories you're thinking about that were...
Mm, No, nothing really.
Did you?
Jumps to mind.
Okay, did you get a chance to run Cataract Canyon?
I've only done it once in the fall.
Okay.
And I've never seen it big.
No. A cataract in the fall can be really nice.
Yeah, it was very nice.
When was Beautiful. That? Do you remember?
Probably in the late 80s, early 90s, something like that.
Okay.
Maybe it was later 90s. I don't know. I do remember I had a lot of shoulder issues, so I ended up rowing a lot.
Okay. Yes, it seems like a number of kayakers end up with rotator cuff issues and turn into rafters. it's an understandable progression. And then it sounds like you were in Lador in the 70s.
Yeah. We did it in wildwater boats several times, too. That was really fun.
Now, those are the...
We did DESA, too, in wildwater boats. In the early spring or late fall.
Those are longer. The wild water boats are longer, is that right?
Yeah, they're longer and have a U-shaped hull.
Okay.
Quite tippy. Fast.
Were those self-support trips, or did you have a raft to bring gear?
Self-support.
Wow. So all the...
Sometimes we'd have a raft. Yeah, for the DESA, we'd have a raft, that's right. But we did, a group of us racers did Zor a couple times in the fall, just two or three day weekend kind of thing. That was really fun.
Okay. Nice. And would you take out at Echo Park, or would you go down through Split Mountain?
Go down.
Okay. Nice. Those are hard boats to steer through in places like Hell's Half Mile, where there are some rocks you need to miss. Would you portage those, or just cruise on through as best as you could?
No, you learn how to steer them.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I wanted to ask you about the Biobío and the rivers in South America. When did the Bio come to your attention as a river in South America that was something you guys should investigate?
I guess it was shortly before we ran it. We ran it in 1979.
Okay.
And one other group from Idaho had run it. There's a whole bunch of big water boaters up in Idaho.
Yes.
I forget their names now. And they had left their boat stack then down there, and we contacted them, and they let us use them. But they were hollow forms, the first generation. They were made out of the same plastic and rigidness of the trash cans.
Wow. Okay.
So what would happen is you'd go through a big wave, and it would collapse the deck, and then your spray skirt would pop off.
Wow.
It was terrifying.
Yeah. No wonder they left their boats.
they were bigger guys, too. They were way too big for me, too. But anyway, it turned out we ran it the wrong time of year, too. It was just Eric Fletcher and me. And then Eric had contacted the Chilean kayak club, which they were basically at the stage of kayaking development that U.S. was in the 50s.
Okay.
They were making their own boats with fabric and wood. And And there was a father, and he didn't go, but the son went. He was fairly young. Ricardo was his name. And he wouldn't listen to any suggestions we made. Although Eric is one of the most tactful people I know. And Eric is fluent in Spanish, Spanish, what's that called?
Castilian?
Castilian, yeah. And would go on these long explanations of why you should do this and that that he refused to do. One of the things he insisted on was only bringing for supplies a frying pan and oatmeal in a paper bag.
Ooh.
And, oh yeah, we'll get food from the locals as we go through. And we're just like, I don't think there are that many locals around, but
yeah,
whatever, you know. And then he kept, I mean, before we even got to the difficult rapids, he kept tipping over and swimming, and he'd drop all his gear, and it took all three of us to collect it, and then he'd, each time he swam, he'd climb farther and farther up the shore, and we'd have to talk him back down to come back. And then when we got to the first big rapids called Lava South now, I mean, first you, on your right, there's an amazingly beautiful waterfall coming into the river, and above that you see the volcano Villa Rica, which is snow-capped. I mean, it's so picturesque. And it's right by a big calm eddy, and then around the corner is just like this humongous rapid, and all you see is this, a big drop horizon line, and you just see some splashes coming up from the waves.
Wow.
So here, Ricardo had just gone ahead, floating her down, and he never pulled over. And Fletcher and I eddied out, went to scout the rapid, and no sign of him. I mean, it was really awful. And so we quickly portaged the top part, and Eric was there too, and then found a place where we could ferry across to an island. And found him. He was okay. He was had his life jacket sucked off and his shoes sucked off, but he'd survived.
Wow.
His boat was gone. And by then, the canyon was quite deep. It was a big wall of columnar basalt on the right, and very difficult to access on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And he just said, call the helicopters. And, of course, we had no way to do that. But up above the river, there is a road, because they were already making preparations for the dam.
Right.
And so he got up there somehow. And Fletcher gave him his shoes, and he found a ride into the next town there on a horse or something. And we didn't see him anymore, but he was okay. And so meanwhile, we still had a big, major part of the rapid left. The river was super high. No one had ever run it so high.
Mm.
Well, only one group had run it. They'd run it in February. That's when the commercials run it now.
Okay.
And we were in December, so we were in spring. And I just looked at it, and I said, nah, I'm not running this. I'm going to walk around. And so Fletcher ran my boat through and walked back through the basalt, sharp basalt, in bare feet.
Ooh.
And went to run his boat through, and he flipped and swam. And he almost never swam.
Wow.
And by then I was sitting down near my boat on this little outcropping of rock where I could actually... By now, it was also getting late in the day. And it was our first day of actually sunshine. It was... It had been raining a lot.
Hmm.
And so we were all exhausted. And so I saw Fletcher get out, just exhausted and, you know, really looked awful and on the other bank. But and the river was so loud and wide, all we could do was do sign language. We couldn't hear each other. And I saw him just start heading downstream to walk to find his boat. And meanwhile, Eric had paddled by. And so everyone was gone separately, their separate ways. We were all completely separated. And I was totally exhausted. And there was a little, enough space on this little rock outcropping that I could lie down. And I said, I'm just going to sleep here. And I had my boat. I could make some tea. And I just like, oh, I can't do anything. It looked like there was no way I could get out of the canyon except to paddle. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I was just like so tired and just like, I can't think now, so I'm just going to sleep. And I lay down and after a while, and so everyone had disappeared. And after a while, I'm looking around, just sort of like, I wonder if there's a route up out of this place. And because it just looked like this solid wall of rock. And I look up on the rim, and there are these guys on horses pointing at me way off in the distance. I'm just like, whoa. And then I see they're starting to pick their way down. They're coming down with their horse.
Wow.
And they worked their way down, and they picked me up. They came and they got me, and they carried me on a horse back up there.
Wow.
And they took me to the house of a young woman who was a widow. And she fed me dinner, and still remember we had eggs. And then she had this little windowless room. It's like a closet that I could sleep in. It had a bed. And that night, after dinner, we were sitting around in her living room sort of thing, and all these men from the village started trickling in very respectfully and politely. And she had a TV hooked to a car battery, and there was some world soccer game on, and they all sat and watched it.
Oh, nice.
It was exciting. And and then when it was over, they all left, and I went to bed.
Nice.
And then in the morning, and my Spanish wasn't that good. I was pretty bad, but I knew a little. And I kind of got the gist that everybody was okay, and I'd see them the next day. Everyone in the town seemed to know what was going on except me. And then finally, I saw Eric and Fletcher the next day, and everyone had said, oh, yeah, all the stuff will end up in this eddy, and we're going to go get it. And sure enough, everything was there. Everyone got their boats back.
Huh.
And we took we got on a bus after that to get past the main rapids, the rest of the rapids, because it was just too high.
Yeah.
So we didn't really run it, you know, the hard part.
Well, you had an adventure.
Yeah, it was a great adventure, and I met all kinds of cool people. And it started raining again. Forget where we stayed with some other campesinos for a while in this, and the houses, they don't have chimneys, but they heat with wood.
Okay.
So they're all full of smoke.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to escape under the eaves. They have some little gaps, but it was just too smoky for me. I couldn't handle it, and it was pouring rain, and I had to keep going out to get some air. But they were, Eric just had these long, interesting conversations about politics with them, because it was, you know, the whole thing with Allende and Pinochet was all new, and so many people we met had just thought Allende was so great. And it was, yeah, it was really interesting because we, from the U.S., had been getting all this bad information from the government.
Yeah.
And finally, we, oh, yeah, we took a bus to below the Bad Rapids, and we were out of food because all our contents of our boat was soaked, and even our passports, because none of the dry bags were very good back then.
Okay.
And we were on the bus, and so I asked one of the ladies, a lot of the ladies had bread. They were going to market to sell their bread or something.
Mm.
And so I politely asked, you know, do you think we could buy some bread? And all of a sudden, like, 10 of them rushed up, take mine, take mine.
it was so
nice. And yeah, they just threw our kayaks on top with the chickens and all that stuff. It was really a fun bus ride.
Nice.
And then Eric was sitting next to a gentleman, and he described to him, he wanted to find out where we should get off to put in again. So he described what a good put in was, you know, sloping gently, and you place the stage and pack your boat and everything. Oh, the guy goes, oh yeah, I got the perfect place. And it was like getting to be 5 at night or something. And so we knew we had to get put in and find a campsite still before dark.
Mm.
Eric had explained all that. And we get there, and it's just a drop off to the river, like 25 feet cliff. And there's a bridge over it. And Eric goes, well, why exactly is this such a great place? And he goes, oh, because now you can come to my house for coffee before you go. And we're just politely saying, oh, we got to get going. And actually, it turned out to be fine because we just did a seal. We could do a seal entrance. We load our boats up top and just, boom, seal entered in there.
Great.
And
wow.
It was a really fun couple, I forget how many days, paddle after that. And we were towing Ricardo's boat. I forget what he did. He took the boat. I guess he took the bus the whole way. He was done with kayaking. And we were towing his boat, and yeah, the waves were still huge, and we were doing endos sometimes just from the waves.
Wow!
But it was amazing to see this big river and a temperate climate and no houses, nothing, no development.
It was, wow.
Just reassuring to see there's this much arable, you know, temperate climate land hadn't been touched. There was an occasional big farm, but mostly it was just wild. It was really amazing.
Wow. Nice.
Then when we got to the town, it was called Rincos or something like that, where the train would take us. There, when we got out, it was in a city park, and there was a big wedding there, and they all came running over and tapped on our boats, and that's what everyone would do because they'd never seen fiberglass before or plastic.
Yeah,
they just tap on the boats because all their clothes were handmade out of natural fibers, and
wow.
They just rode horses mostly, and
yeah,
and they all invited us to the wedding. We really had fun. And then we took the train back where we're our next stop.
Nice. Wow. Very cool. Well, maybe this is a good place to kind of wrap up part two. What do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Ann Hopkinson, thank you very much for another really wonderful interview. This is the end of part two. Today is Friday, April 12th, 2019. My name is Tom Martin, and Anne, thank you so very much.
You're welcome.